Now we're going to pick up where we left off in our second conference, and we're talking about redemptive suffering and the state of being a victim. From that day, when the Lord indicated he wanted to be a victim, she received many more graces and helps from the Lord, also visits from Jesus and Our Lady almost continually, depending on her need during the rampant attacks from the demons. Her first experience as a victim came when Jesus offered to allow her to experience the pains of his crown of thorns, which he fitted on her head. She said the pains were so great in her eyes, ears, back of her neck, and mouth that she was unable to eat any food, and it lasted for 2 or 3 days. Now the family became worried over this and forced her to eat. But Louisa left the room in order to suffer without being seen by her family because she would faint from the pains. Her family surrounded her with great concern and were weeping, thinking that she was about to die. After examinations by several doctors, they could not determine what her illness was, and Louisa could not tell them what was happening within her soul. In all this confusion, she complained to Jesus, who consoled her and reminded her of his plans. He said, "Know that everything I allow to happen to you, whether by devils or by creatures, is directed by me for your good. It is intended to lead your soul to that final state which I have chosen. So close your eyes, remain peaceful in my arms, and do not look around to examine what's happened to you." Now, after more medical examinations and doctors that decided her illness was just nerves, advised her to take walks, cold baths, and continual distractions. So her family decided to keep a constant watch over her day and night so that she had very little privacy. All this became a great trial for her. Several years were spent in this very trying state, suffering from demons, from people around her, and the pains that Jesus set for her as redemptive suffering. After 6 years in this state of suffering, she was forced to remain in bed. Often she would faint, her mouth and jaw closed so tightly she could not eat. As she swallowed a few drops of fluid, she would vomit immediately. She now experienced a new form of suffering, a state of petrification, becoming stone. In this state, she was immobile and seemingly dead, and no one could revive her. Only the priest could do this, and with an order given in obedience to her, which to she responded immediately. But she was still in the early stages of this, and they thought she was pulling a trick. So they were not convinced of the supernaturalness in all this, and they were not willing to come. She had to wait in a state of death for 10 days before a priest would come. Some priests were critical and insensitive, saying her state was fake, so she could look like a saint, or she deserved to be whipped to keep her from falling into that state. Some thought she was possessed by the devil. And Louisa said, "They said other things about me that were better left unsaid." There were times when the priest would keep her in that state for 8 continuous days. It was death while still alive. In other words, she could be revived, but all medical people say she's dead, no brain waves or anything. She could move in any way. She could not move in any way, could not take fluids, much less eat. This martyrdom lasts 4 years. Despite the way the priest used her in her early years of redemptive suffering, Jesus said, "It is my custom to manifest my work through my priests. I have given them the faculty of knowing, judging, and encouraging the soul to proceed without perplexity according to the criteria of Leviticus. And my priests also have the power to suspend or disregard everything that according to their consideration does not meet the criteria of revelation." But we cannot overlook the fact that some priests failed in their discernment. They should have known better, therefore not make the soul suffer in the ways that she did. They will have to answer for their misjudgments. But the soul is never wrong in being obedient, as Louisa was in every instant. The virtue of obedience was one of her greatest virtues. And it was this virtue that led other priests later in her life to be convinced that her state of suffering was truly supernatural. And they had a high regard for her sanctity and preserved her writings for us to this day. Now Jesus revealed to her the next stage in his plan for her. He was inviting her to accept these almost mortal sufferings as a continuous state. He said that it would purify her to become worthy of his mystical marriage. Following this, he would bring her to the last transformation in him, so as he said, that the two of us can be one. Just as two candles melted by the same flame are fused and become one body and thus united, are of the same thought, same love, same work of reparation. I will transform you into me and me into you, so that you may be crucified in me, with me, and for me. When she wrote these words, she had already been bedridden for 12 years. Louisa was given the special grace to love suffering. She said, I can assert that I have always been a lover of this sweet suffering. I was always more resigned when in continuous pain than when I was not in pain. Jesus now invited her to a permanent state of victim. He said, give yourself as victim of love, expiation, and reparation. He promised to visit her every day to bring special graces, great consolations. He also explained why he was confining her to a small bed for the rest of her life. He said, I have placed you in this condition so that I could come to you more freely to talk to you. I freed you from all the external world, from every occasion of having to deal with creatures. I purified your interior in a way that no thoughts or affections of earth remained in you, and I replaced them with celestial, heavenly thoughts, overflowing with love for me. Now that I am familiar to you, I want to identify you to myself so that your body, as well as your soul, can be at my disposal to render perpetual holocaust before me. He added that he confined her to that small bed to free her from family obligations and other distractions so that she would benefit by frequent visits from him. And he added, we are alone and there's no one to obstruct our conversations or interfere with the mutual communications of our pains and sufferings. He was aiming at a state that she would reach, and as he described in these words, your will and my will, words like that, will disappear completely, and you will be called, and this will be called, our will. Now, her detachment. Jesus demanded total detachment. He said, when he noticed my slightest attachments to unimportant things, he gently urged me to withdraw in these words. My heart freezes when you look with pleasure upon earthly things that are not necessities. They cloud celestial things and impede the mystical marriage I promised you from taking place. Never desire to acquire, never yearn for, and never take anything not really necessary. Make do with whatever is given you and ask for nothing else. We can't argue with that. He's God. He can make complete demands, and he wanted everything, the best, because he gave her the best. Now, a new cross. Louisa now suffered from continuous vomiting of whatever she ate. Jesus asked her to offer this cross for the offenses committed by the sins of gluttony. Again, her confessor agreed to this, Then he withdrew the permission for her to remain fasting, so that she continued to vomit. Always obedient to the confessor at great cost to her body and peace of mind. From that time on, she lived in a state of total fast until her death, with a small exception when she ate on one occasion. So now the mystical marriage. The time was now ready for the step called the mystical marriage. In preparation for this, Luisa writes that Jesus visited more often. She said, sometimes 3 or 4 times a day. He came and went continuously. She said he acted like a lover who could not continue without thinking, loving, and visiting his spouse very often. He revealed himself saying, you see that I love you so much that I cannot remain away from you. I feel unrequited when I do not see you to talk to you openly and up close. And I think you are alone and suffer so much for love of me, so I have to come and see if you need anything. Then, she said, he would arrange my pillows, put his arm around my neck, embrace me, kiss me again and again. This state was so wonderfully delightful and loving, she said, she was forced to write, if the sweetness and bitterness, see the pain was there, but also the sweetness, if the bitterness were not given together, the soul becoming truly a victim of love, expiation, reparation, would not be able to bear it for long and go on living. The body would disintegrate and the soul would quickly go to join God. Now note the suffering she experienced seemed to modify the almost unbearable joy and ecstasy of divine love produced in her. After so much redemptive suffering, Jesus rewarded Luisa with many loving, marvelously delightful experiences of his love and presence, and special signs of affection. A new experience was given her. Jesus allowed her to leave her body. She described it in these words, he made my soul come out of every part of my body and gave me a most simple body form, resplendent with pure light. I took flight rapidly behind him and toured the vastness of the heavens. In this state, her soul experienced the same sensations, though, that she did feel in her body, but with a clear perception of all that she saw. She said the soul penetrates even the most abstruse, imperceptible things, close up or far away, no matter how distant they may be, she sees them, but only in as far as God wills. After making the rounds of heaven, Jesus took her to an evil, sinful place. She saw his face turn, suffer untold tortures, and the look of a person dying in terror. She too was allowed to experience some of his pain, and she said she felt, quote, as if she was being pierced by many knives, lance tips, arrows, darts, daggers, each of them penetrating her soul. While she felt all this in her soul, she also felt in her body when her soul returned to the body. The pain was so great that she would have died if Jesus did not revive her. He also allowed her to experience different sufferings for each of the sins that are committed in the world and the many out-of-the-body experiences that she had. On some of these out-of-the-body flights, Jesus took her into churches where he was offended. She describes what she saw. She said churches where works, meaning the Mass, essentially holy, that were done methodically, meaning mechanically. Prayers that were empty of spirit from within, a false piety, counterfeit devotion, hypocrisy. But she did see a holy priest celebrating Mass with Jesus in him, transformed so as to appear a single person, as if Jesus alone existed and was celebrating the Mass. She found this to be a supernatural marvel with the atmosphere of holiness and dignity present there. Now, after waiting a long time, during which she prepared herself spiritually, being blessed with great consolations, The day for her mystical union with Jesus arrived. October 16, 1888, she was 23 years old. She went through suffering that would take 100 years. The night before, Jesus adorned her with symbolic jewels, precious ornaments, and a beautiful crown of immense value, and a veil that covered her from head to foot. All these decorations reminded her spiritually of the beauty, power, goodness, charity, majesty of God, and all the virtues of Jesus' humanity. Her soul swam in an ocean of consolation. Louisa said that when the demons saw Jesus adorn her with a veil, they were terrified, and they did not dare come close to her or molest her. They had lost all their boldness and rash behavior. She won. The following morning, Jesus came to her with our Blessed Mother and St. Catherine of Siena, who, by the way, was a Third Order Dominican, and so was Louisa. And Jesus signaled the angels to sing a beautiful hymn. St. Catherine assisted Louisa with a kind encouragement, took her hand so Jesus could place a precious wedding ring on her finger. Then he embraced and kissed her several times, and our Blessed Mother also did the same. Now, Jesus gave her a rule of life. He was never done giving. Five rules. First, total detachment from all creation, including herself. Lord said, I was to live in perfect forgetfulness of all things so that my interior would be disposed to and fixed on the sweet memory of him. I was never to know anyone, no friends, not even myself. Second, to get out of self, live in the immense sea of his providence. Not to take the slightest pleasure in others, always keep herself close to her spouse, face him so that he cannot doubt me. Third, he said, not your will, but mine alone shall remain in you to dominate like a king in his royal palace. I want you to disappear in me. Enter into the infinite power of my will. From it, you will derive all the graces you will need to raise you up into me. And the fourth, from now on, there is to be no you and I. There will be no I shall do, you shall do. These will be replaced by we will do. Everything will be ours. You, as faithful spouse, will take common action with me and guide the destiny of the world. Now that's an unusual statement. By my blood, all redeemed people have become children and brethren of mine. Now he said, what's yours is mine. What's mine is yours. They will also be children and brethren of yours. You will love them as a true mother. Loaded with the merits from the pains you suffer and sprinkled with your blood and mine, you will lead them to my heart. That's an unusual statement. And yet these theologians did not argue with that. And the fifth was, you shall become always more immersed in my absolute will. Then you will acquire the fullness of my love. And as you expand your intelligence and love, you will find all creatures in me. With just one look, you will see them all and know the state of their conscience. Then you will, as a loving mother, and in the spirit of mercy, you will make the supreme sacrifice and immolate yourself for these creatures. In this stage, Louisa enjoyed indescribable blessings. In God's treasury, there's no end. Jesus transported her soul into paradise with him many times. There she heard the canticles of the blessed souls who constantly sing hymns of glory and thanksgiving to God's majesty. She contemplated in God the many choirs of angels and the ranks of the saints. All were immersed in the will of God and identified in its immensity. She felt very embarrassed as she related the following. She said, "Sometimes I found myself walking with Jesus, my spouse, in that blessed native land among choirs of angels, saints, and blessed ones. Because I was a newlywed, they all united in a circle and paid court to us, participating at the same time in the joys of our just before marriage. And Jesus said to them, because of her reciprocity," meaning her full cooperation, openness to my grace, "this soul has become a triumph and a prodigy of my love." He then said to them, "See how my love for her has surpassed everything." Then he placed her in what he called a seat of glory. Jesus then said to her, "Here is your place of glory, and no one can take it from you." She thought that she would now be living in eternity, but in an instant she was back in her body. This return to her body state was a source of great pain. She said, "Compared to heaven, all earthly things were like trash to me." It left her in a continuous state of interior pain, bitterness, annoyance with the things of the world. She felt that it was impossible to continue to live on earth. Now, these heavenly visits were frequent, but constantly frustrating on her return to her body. She called these experiences Jesus' jokes. He would invite her to go to heaven with him, and then would divert her to minister to some sinner and perform redemptive suffering for their conversion. And of course, she always agreed to this wish. There was such familiarity between her and Jesus that they created a resentment in her, and sometimes bitterness and impertinence, when he did these things. During all this time, she was continuously in bed expiating for sinners. After a period of 3 years, Jesus told her that he wanted to ratify their mystical marriage with the sanction of the Blessed Trinity in view of the heavenly court. This grace was granted on the Vigil of the Nativity, 1889, September 7th, before the Nativity of Our Lady. She was now 24 years old. On September the 8th, Louisa describes the scene. Jesus presented a ring of three precious stones, one white, green, one green, and one red. Handed it to the Father, who blessed it and returned it to his only begotten Son. The Holy Spirit held my right hand, and Jesus placed the ring on my right ring finger. At once I was granted the kiss of the three divine persons, who, one after the other, imparted a special blessing to me. Following this experience, there was another one. Louisa re-entered her body, and a few days later, in Holy Communion, she sensed the presence of the Holy Trinity in herself as she saw them in heaven. She heard a voice coming from all three persons saying, "Take courage and do not be afraid. We are about to accept you as ours and take total possession of your soul." She then saw the Blessed Trinity enter into her, take possession of her heart, and heard the words, "In your heart, we will make our permanent abode." She then described what took place. "I felt as if I had been evicted and no longer lived in myself. Most assuredly, they lived in me and I in them. It seemed as if my body had become their habitation. I felt the royal presence of the three divine persons who sensibly acted within me. I could hear their voice, clear and resonant, come far from beyond me. I could clearly hear all that was said among them." 32 years later, Jesus explained to her what happened at that day. Louisa asked Jesus at that time too then. She said, talking about how they're wedded, and she said, "What is my dowry now?" And Jesus replied, "Your family is the Trinity. All three divine persons descended from heaven, and then after a few days, we took possession of your heart and took our perpetual residence there. We took the reins of your intelligence, your heart, all of you. Everything you did was an outlet of our created will in you. It was a confirmation that your will was animated by an eternal will. It only remains to make this known so that you and others too can partake of this great good. I am doing this by calling one minister or another, and even a minister from faraway places, indicating the time has come now that he will introduce others to pass on the message. Well, what about her sufferings in the crucifixion? Jesus now began to lead Luisa in the stage of experiencing crucifixion. First, he granted her grace to enlighten her on the great value of the cross, and he said, when pain, suffering, poverty, sickness, and all types of crosses were held as true infamy and in reproach, but were suffered by me, or having come from me, suffering sanctified, divinized by my contact, it was changed in appearance. It is more than sweet and gratifying. A soul that received these good things from me is more than honored because she has received my endorsement and becomes a child of God. Luisa responded to these words with a request to experience his crucifixion. She said, at this time, my desire to be crucified by Jesus was so great that I felt consumed by the love of suffering. Her request was conditioned. She said, I ask that no external sign be seen on me from this grace. Yes, give me quickly your every pain and suffering. Give me your wounds. But let all that happens to me be concealed from others. Let it be between you and me alone. Well, the first time she experienced crucifixion, she said, the rays of light and the nails came out of the crucified Jesus and came to wound me, penetrating my hands and feet. Another ray of light, resplendent together with a lance, came to pierce my heart. And she went on to explain the paradox of happiness and pain felt at the same time. She said the happiness and the pain felt at this time were greater than all the pain she had suffered previous to this time. Now remember what we said about her sufferings. While the pain was greater than all the pain she had suffered, while the pain was not lessened and became almost unbearable, she said, the sweet contentment I obtained from these wounds cannot be described in words. And yet she felt as though she was dying from pain. See, it's a contradiction, but it is the beatitude. See, it's pain and joy. She said the power and energy of the pain at the same time sustained and invigorated me and made me feel that I was no longer dying. She confirmed that nothing of the wounds of crucifixion appeared externally. During the time of the crucifixion, Luisa was in a deathly stupor. She could see the wounds of Jesus clearly impressed on her body. She called this period of her life the wedding of the cross. From now on, there were so many other crucifixions in subsequent years that she lost count. She describes the blessed results of these pains. To my great joy, she said, Jesus permitted many souls from purgatory to be invited to paradise, expiated by my pains. They descended from heaven with angels, surrounded my bed, refreshed me with their celestial chant. It sounded like the canticle of joy, the hymn of thanks, and thanksgiving for the grace of God in heaven. Jesus gave Luisa such a great desire to suffer his passion that she pleaded with him to renew his passion and crucifixion within her. In response, Jesus transported her soul to the holy places in Jerusalem and allowed her to participate in the sufferings he experienced at different stages of his passion. First, the scourging. She felt it. Then his crowning with thorns. Then the carrying of the cross. And then the crucifixion. Now, Jesus said some words of wisdom about the cross. He said, unless you take up your cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. To Luisa, he gave the words of wisdom that are hard for the world to understand because worldly people reject all kinds of suffering. But a Christian who believes that all things work unto good for those who love God sees a manifestation of God's loving wishes for us in everything that happens in our daily life. And that includes the sufferings and pains of daily life. So to Louisa, Jesus said, "The cross is the mark of the true Christian. Like an open book, it says everything. It distinguishes clearly, without deception, the saint from the sinner, the perfect from the imperfect, and the fervent from the lukewarm. It bestows light on the well-disposed, distinguishes the good from the bad, reveals more or less who should be in heaven. All the victims acquire more brilliance and splendor when they are well grafted onto the cross." She was now led by grace to ask for the grace of being always crucified. Jesus did not grant this request, but asked her consent, which he gave to be crucified at his will. To purify her more thoroughly, Jesus decided to hear her confession. It lasted 7 hours. Over a period of 7 hours, he took her through her life, helped her to confess all her sins. She describes some of the exchanges between herself and Jesus during this confession. She wrote, "She was made actually aware of the great offenses given to God by the sin of pride. Now, trembling more than before, I confess my thoughts and words I had used against his expressed wishes as well as sins because of omission. I confess it all with such sorrow and bitterness of soul that I felt terrified by my punity and audacity in having offended so good a God, who in spite of my transgressions helped me, preserved me, nourished me." After appearing to her as judge during this confession, he changed to the appearance of a loving father. And he said, "Promise me not to sin anymore. Withdraw from every shadow of sin that might offend me." Then he pronounced the word of absolution, allowed a river of his precious blood to flow into her soul. The effects of this absolution she describes as, "I felt as if I had been reborn to a new life, and more than ever filled with the fullness of his grace. I remember this grace always. I feel a singular joy rise up in my soul and a thrill throughout my being." She describes now what it means to live in the divine will. She mentions that now she had greater yearning to be faithful to all the grace that she was receiving. She said, "He either reinvigorates me and returns me to the state of victim, or he prepares me to live more perfectly in his divine will, which demands the greatest divine grace and the most activity on my part. Since I am nothing, I must take everything from God and the labor and work to infuse it into others, almost like a physician who undertakes to transfuse an individual with someone else's blood to make him recover his bodily health. To do this, I must still take from God his grace and apply it to chosen souls so that all may return to him." So in that little bed, she was a live wire. See? He wasn't dozing off. At different times, Jesus was also present when she went to her personal confessor. After the absolution, he would appear as the confessor. Or he would take the place of the confessor and alternate his voice with that of the confessor in advice given to her. She always experienced special spiritual graces from these kinds of confessions. Now, the blessings and rewards for souls from her sufferings. Jesus took Louisa on many out-of-the-body flights. At such times, he showed her the need for saving souls. Once she saw a man murdered by many bullets and was going to die and would be damned. He asked her to bear the sufferings that his sins deserved. She gladly accepted. After 1 hour, gave her a sign of his restoration to life, and that when everyone thought the murdered man was dead, he revived, slowly returned to good health. Her And she explained this to the confessor, and he didn't believe it. So she said, go here and check this out. Sure enough, she found the man. Everybody thought he was dead, he was alive, restored to health. Then he began to believe her. Her victim's sufferings also prevented a plague from destroying the lives of many people of her city. Only God himself knows how many souls have been saved and released from purgatory through redemptive sufferings of Luisa. Now, the different ways which God speaks to her. Jesus takes the soul out of the body. It happens in an instant without much feeling. The body wants to follow the soul but remains immobile as if dead. The soul follows in a kind of flight behind Jesus, travels over the universe, lands, seas, mountains, skies, into the regions of purgatory or heaven. She doesn't mention hell. Sometimes the soul leaves the body more quietly, and the body, as it were, asleep. And she says, it is insensibly absorbed in the presence of God. When Jesus leaves, the soul tries to follow him wherever he goes. Body remains as if petrified and feels nothing of the external world, even if the whole world were to shake, or if the body were stabbed, burned, or cut to pieces. When she was out of her body during such experiences, she sometimes saw her confessor coming to her to revive her. So she would, thinking he was in a deathly state, but by Jesus' command, she came back in an instant, found herself back in her body in time for the confessor, so he didn't know. The knowledge she receives in both above states is instantaneous. This is something that we wish we had. Jesus makes her understand what he wants to impress on her intellect. She says, it's enough to say that many sublime things are learned in a flash, more than it is learned by reading books for an entire lifetime. It is so lofty and sublime that it is impossible for the human intelligence to express it in words, all the impressions received by the soul in a single instant. So our spirit is capable of the language of heaven, but we don't have the language here to express it. There is another way that Jesus speaks to the soul while it's in a body. The words he speaks reach the sense of hearing of the soul, and the soul speaks to Jesus in a conversational way like two people talking to each other. But Jesus' words are few, maybe only four or five words. But one word of Jesus can produce an immense understanding in the soul. She said Jesus uses a mode of speaking, a language appropriate to the intelligence of that person. There's no need to look up words in the dictionary to share Jesus' words to others. One can use the same words Jesus uses, like he does to the children in Medjugorje, to the Juan Diego in Mexico, and in the children of Fatima, and so on. But she says, the knowledge communicated directly to the soul in an instant is sometimes impossible to share, but Jesus acts like a very wise, gifted teacher. He possesses superlative knowledge in all the sciences. He uses a language understood and spoken by the pupil, since he wants the scientific truth he teaches to be understood by others. Another way the soul understands truth is by, quote, participation in his essence. That means the very nature of God. She speaks of Jesus telling her about his beauty, purity, and as Jesus was speaking, she said her soul felt as if something divine had entered into her. She said a supernatural imprint had remained in her in a way that understands this truth. The sight of the beauty of Jesus, everything beautiful on earth appeared as mere earthly trifles, toys. She said the same thing about experiencing the purity, charity, goodness, simplicity, and all the virtues, attributes of God. Her words were, when Jesus speaks to the soul, he communicates his virtues as well as the infinite attributes of his divinity. She gave an example. Once Jesus said to her, do you see how pure I am? I want the same purity also in you. At once, as she heard these words, she felt as if his purity had been transfused into her, and she began to live as if she had no body. She felt drowsy, intoxicated by this balsam-like fragrance, and enjoyed the freshness of the atmosphere surrounding him, filled with delightful perfumes. Her body also shared in this experience, became very simple. She said, its sense of correctness and the nausea of impurity possessed me so much at such an extent that if I perceived an impurity, even from a distance, my stomach would rebel with strong episodes of vomiting. The soul, she said, to whom God has spoken about purity becomes transformed into purity, so that she now feels she can no longer live in herself. She lives and acts only in Jesus, since he has taken permanent residence in her. She ends this description with a sigh. How desirable it is to participate in the virtues and attributes of God that Jesus extends to the soul in a creative way. I would give everything that exists in the world in exchange for a single moment of such a special communication by which the soul gets closer to Jesus, sublimating herself to the infused knowledge of the blessed and the angels in paradise. And the fourth way that Jesus used to speak to the soul is by communicating between hearts. The soul is the guest of the heart of Jesus who dwells within the soul. He is always vigilant in the intimate hiding place of her heart. Both are as if fused and made into one. To make himself understood in her interior, it is sufficient for him to make a single movement. At other times, he uses words that reach the ear of her body. Namely here, like you're hearing my words. She says Jesus uses this method very, very often because he takes direction of her soul. If she's negligent in her duties, overlooks something, he nudges her sweetly to resume her goodwill. If she is upset, sad, moving slowly, wanting in charity, etc., he at once corrects her by word. This brings about an immediate response to follow the holy will of God. After all this, so much more could be said about this great saint, one of the holiest souls that ever lived on earth. Can you believe that? After all this, Jesus himself has said there was only one other person who truly lived in the divine will besides himself, namely our Blessed Mother is the only one, and then Louisa is the other one. Respected authorities, theologians, bishops, confessors, spiritual directors have had the highest praise, admiration for the holy life virtues of this blessed soul. She is given the best proofs of holiness, heroic charity, absolute obedience to all authorities, profound humility, heroic courage in the face of unbelievable sufferings as a victim soul, and redemptive sufferings of all kinds. It remains for us to listen to her wonderful message about consecrating ourselves to the divine will in preparation for the coming new Pentecost. It will be the coming of the kingdom of God on earth when we look forward to a new heaven, a new earth, the triumph of the Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart of Mary. We will live in the divine will of God, and God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Alleluia! He's impressing upon us that sin is not to be taken lightly. And then in our so-called examinations, we don't check all our motives. See? And we don't see ourselves as he does. But, well, he's saying, therefore, we little peons, when we go to confession, we should say, and please forgive me for all my sins. Okay? No. Not even Padre Pio. But, all right, let's have some reaction to this. Don't say how nice.
Place now.